Good morning. I think it's highly appropriate that we decided that the month of honesty needed 5 Sundays. We needed 5 Sundays to reflect on what it means to live lives steeped in honesty. And this morning, we're going to explore what it means in particular for our church community to be a community of honesty, wrestling with difficult things and wrestling with things that challenge us in an open, honest, forthright way. So, now's the time that I'm going to talk with the children. We're actually going to do some more singing, so if there are any kids or youth or children in the back who would like to come forward on the quilts here, we've got a robust group up front here, including 2 people I haven't met before who have new name tags on, Mia and Andra. Nice to meet you guys. Nice to have you here today. Well, today I'm going to be talking with the adults about the meaning of sanctuary and safety. So this room that we're meeting in, we call the sanctuary because it's kind of the center of our church community because it's where we have worship all the time. But it's also, sanctuary also has the meaning of being a place that is safe, a place that is meaningful, a place that is important to us. And one of the ways that a place is important and meaningful to us is it's a place that we feel really comfortable. It's a place that we feel safe, like we can really be ourselves. And I was thinking this week about a song that's really important in our family, although Athena may not even remember. It's really important to me and to Mommy anyway, because we used to sing it when Demetrius was in the hospital and he was in his little in the ICU. And it's a song that I actually taught my small group class, the Soul Matters group, when we were, the first week we met, we sang this song called Safe Passage. And so I thought I would teach it to you because I think whenever you're feeling kind of like you want to feel safe and connected to other people, this might be a song that you could sing. So it's a song that goes like this, and the adults can remember it too, so that when I run into them around town, I expect to hear them singing this. When I sing. So it sounds like this. Safe passage, safe passage, safe passage, safe passage on your way. And then when you get even more excited, you can say, safe passage on your way, brother, safe passage on your way. Sister, safe passage on your way. My prayer for all of you is safe passage through everything in life, because life will throw lots of things your way, but hopefully we will sing things to you and people will hold you and love you whenever things get rocky. So safe passage on your way. Will you join me now in that reflective, honest space of openness and vulnerability? Will you pray with me? Spirit of life and of love, we are grateful this morning for every community that has ever held us with the light of truth, with the spark of honesty, with the warmth of love and compassion. And as we gather this morning, we're aware, deeply aware of how much being a part of a community asks of us. Whether that community is as small as a marriage or as large as a congregation, we know that we are invited each and every time we connect to bring our whole selves, those parts of ourselves of which we are proud, and those parts of ourselves which we wish others never saw. This being human is hard work. This being human is multifaceted. And this being human takes all the heart, all the help, and all the love that we can muster. So in this creative process that is living a life, we ask, Spirit of all life, that you might be with us and among us and, yes, beyond us all. For all of this, for all of this mystery, we lift our hearts in prayer this morning. Blessed be, and amen.
When I first read the description for this service, referring to the adult owls as our whole lives sexuality curriculum, coupled with the monthly theme of honesty, I thought, now that's a personal reflection I'll be interested in hearing. And then I realized I was going to be giving it. My ever helpful husband suggested, hey, maybe you could consult Audubon to see what they say about our local owl species. I really couldn't imagine reflecting on my sex life from the pulpit in front of all of you dear people. Years ago, our kids taught us the very apt phrase, TMI, too much information. So rest assured, I'm not going there. So, when is sharing too much information? What are the boundaries of honesty, and how much must we tell? When I go out in the world, I try to always go as my best self, but often I go as my vulnerable self. I may be carrying a particular sensitivity, a recent hurt, or what I call a pre-pressed button. We're regularly asked, how are you today? Or how's your day going? It may be the checker at the grocery store trying to pass the time, or another casual acquaintance making a casual greeting. Likely, the person doing the asking doesn't really want to know the answer to the question they just asked. Thinking about our theme of honesty, I've been noticing this a lot lately. Do I really want to tell them how it is for me just now? If things are not going well, or I'm worried about something, is it dishonest to say, just fine, thanks, how about you? Or is that the right thing to do? I remember a time when I left my mother in her care home, knowing that she was fast approaching the end of her days. Heading home to write a warning email to all her beloved nieces and nephews, I stopped to pick up something for a quick meal and was asked, how's your day going? By a well-intentioned and cheerful youngster. Now, if I'd been asked the same question by a good friend, different. What if that question was asked in crowded Lion Hall versus that friend's home? What would an honest level of disclosure be in each instance? I'm developing my own concept of situational honesty. My level of comfort with disclosure depends upon the situation. Who's asking? Where are we, in private or in public? How well do I know and trust them? And do they really want to know the answer? Is it even fair to answer a simple question honestly every time? I think it would be useful to have a code word for, ouch, you've stepped on my boundary. Or another one for, if you really want to know and have the time to listen, call me. And when we ask that question, we should be aware of that chirpy fine we get might not be the honest truth. Simple question, but a complex process to come up with the right answer.
This morning, I have so much to say to you, I don't have a reading. So I'm just going to launch right in to sanctuary. The notion of safety and sanctuary is deeply, fundamentally appealing. Sanctuary as sacred place or shrine, or as the dictionary that I looked at said, by extension, any place of safety. Think political sanctuary or bird sanctuary or native plant sanctuary. And yet, safety, sanctuary, is as elusive as it is necessary. There is a basic level at which we must feel and be safe in order to function. And there are times, all too often, in fact, when we must push ourselves beyond our comfort zones, our sense of certain and known safety. But this morning, I want to look a little more deeply at this notion of safety and sanctuary in all of its complexity. In spite of myself, because I really knew better and had experienced difficulty in community before, when I began to study for the ministry, I had an idyllic image in mind of the congregation that I would eventually serve. It would be, in my mind's eye, a shelter in the storm of people's lives. It would be a literal sanctuary filled with unlimited amounts of love and support and welcome for all. It didn't take me long to realize how misguided that vision was. As much as holding on to that ideal is valuable, acknowledging its impossibility is equally important. We can and should always strive to be as loving and caring and inclusive a community as we can muster, but there will always be, and must always be, boundaries and limits. I think I've mentioned in the past a seminary professor of mine who was the pastoral care specialist. She was a remarkable woman who said at least three things that I will never forget, two of which apply directly to my message this morning. In a classroom conversation one day, when someone was talking about the importance of offering safety, much in the way I started off my message this morning, that idyllic image of a congregation in which all goes swimmingly well all the time, Rosemary Kenichi, former Catholic nun that she was, teaching at a Unitarian Universalist seminary, looked at all of us in the room and said, "Safe? Who told you the spiritual life was about being safe?" She went on to explain that whenever we are wrestling with the big questions of life and death and meaning, as we are in spiritual community, we seldom feel safe. We are often confronting hard, challenging things. We're confronting our deepest fears, our doubts about how valuable we are, our existential angst, our sense of purpose, our sense of why we're here and what we can do with our lives and to make the world a better place. These are big, big things, and we are often vulnerable when we are here, exploring tender and unsure spots in our lives and in our souls. That rarely feels like solid and safe territory. The second thing that Rosemary said was that she was amazed as an outsider, as someone who had grown up in the Roman Catholic tradition and given her life to it, at the type of behavior that we Unitarian Universalists let people get away with in the name of inherent worth and dignity. She didn't put it this way, but I saw the steam coming out of her ears a little bit, and she was almost saying to us, I can't believe you folks allow people to behave that badly in the name of their inherent worth and dignity. She was saying to us, you can value and appreciate someone as a human being and still say no. No, that's not okay. In fact, she said to us, sometimes saying no is the right thing to say, the best thing to say, the only thing to say that actually does respect someone's inherent worth and dignity and the safety of those around them. We have to draw lines around what behavior will and will not be tolerated. Even inclusive communities have to know where the line is. A covenant which says we treat one another in respectful and mindful ways, that we don't use harsh or biting words to talk about one another or to one another, and when and if we fall short of the covenant, as, let's face it, we will, we do what needs to be done to repair relationship. We apologize. We try harder the next time to express our frustration or attraction or hurt in ways that maintain rather than break relationship. In a way, you could say that one of the deepest elements of our covenant is to be willing to own and admit our mistakes and stay at the table until and unless it is impossible for us to do so. When preparing for this morning, I went back to our history, as I like to do. And I went back in particular to James Luther Adams, Unitarian Universalist theologian and social ethicist who lived from 1901 to 1994. James Luther Adams says that in our liberal religious tradition, one of the things we have to remember most and hold most dear is that human beings, individually and collectively, become human by making commitment, by making promise. The human being as such, James Luther Adams said, borrowing from Martin Buber, the Jewish theologian, the human being is a promise-making, promise-keeping, promise-breaking, promise-renewing creature. The human being is the promise-maker and the commitment-maker. And when I read James Luther Adams again this week, what I realized about that deep sense of covenant is that what he's really saying is that we don't know who we are until we're in relationship. We don't really know who we are until we make a commitment to be with one another in serious and deep and meaningful ways. And then we learn again when we screw up and we have to start over. We come to know who we are when we see our words and our deeds reflected in the eyes of another person. And we stay in and create relationships of all sorts by entering covenant, a set of promises that we try to keep to one another and keep with ourselves. You think, well, that's really great, Shauna, but that's all pretty abstract. Bring it down to the concrete, to the nitty-gritty. So let me offer two concrete examples of what I mean about this covenant keeping that we need to do. One right here in this congregation and one that I experienced in another. Here's the truth-telling, honesty part of the sermon. Not that I was lying earlier, but you get what I mean. This is the truth-telling part that might be hard to hear. Let's put it that way. I have had conversations with several women in this congregation about interactions they have had here with men that felt inappropriate to them. They felt someone was standing too close to their personal space. They felt they received an unwanted or overly intimate touch. And when they told me this, I was, I should say, a little bit taken aback, but surprisingly not surprised. Everything we are subject to in the larger world can happen here as well. Make no mistake. Just as in any other setting, we need to respect the boundaries of others and check in with them before we assume that certain actions or words will be received as we intend them. Many of you know that often when I speak with you in the receiving line afterward, I will say, "Is a hug okay with you?" or "Are you a hugger?" Because I don't assume that my touch will be welcome to all of you. Perhaps you will need to say to someone in the congregation, "I have sort of a crass sense of humor. Do you want to hear one of my favorite jokes?" So that the other person can say, "No thanks." We will need to be open and honest with each other about what is and isn't okay for us. One of the biggest things that's changed in ministerial credentialing with the Unitarian Universalist Association since I went through the process and now interview people in that process is that we have an entire competency area for ministers on what we call sexual health, which is all about boundaries and all about keeping people safe, not only ministers, but our congregants, and being clear about where the lines are and that they are unequivocal. That's my first story. My second story is about when I was doing a guest preaching gig back in February. I was preaching to the congregation in Davis, California, on their topic of the month, which happened to be prayer, one of my favorites. And I was saying in that sermon, as part of my message, that regardless of what our personal thoughts and feelings are about prayer, if someone who deeply believes in prayer, believes that it has power and impact, offers to pray for you, then why not accept that offer? I said toward the end of that sermon, "It can't hurt." Well, after the first service in the receiving line, a man came up to me and said, "I liked everything you said, except it can't hurt." Now, I didn't have time in that receiving line to find out what it is about that phrase and how it has intersected with his life that made it hard to hear. And in a way, it didn't really matter why it was hard for him to hear. It simply mattered that it was. I tried to understand what might be behind his upset. And in the end, I simply decided that his larger point was what was most important. And so, in the second sermon, I didn't say, "It can't hurt." Because I took his larger point, as I do whenever I craft sermons or speak at all in public, for that matter, or speak at all in private, for that matter. I took his point, which is that words matter. We have to be diligent and vigilant in examining the language and the rhetoric we use to get our points across. Lots of things that we are told can't hurt actually hurt us and others. They have hurt us and others and can do so again. We can say things in a way that invites more conversation and more connection, or in ways that sever or damage ties. We do want this congregation to be a sanctuary. Sanctuary as in a safe place to explore things of deepest worth and highest value. Sanctuary as in a place, a harbor that is an inclusive place where we can bring our whole selves no matter what storms of life have buffeted us or which moments of beauty have uplifted us. A sanctuary in the sense of a place where we can invite others. A sanctuary that is a laboratory of love. A laboratory of beloved community. Sanctuary, as in a place of challenge, where we are invited to keep seeking and growing, all the while setting limits and boundaries so that the challenge is a healthy one. I heard a UU ministry student recently invited to offer their elevator speech, and they tried to come up with a Unitarian Universalist elevator speech of the highest order. How do you summarize this crazy, long, multisyllabic faith that we are a part of in short, short quips? Here's what this student came up with. Unitarian, they said, means one love. One vision of God's being, not three, not parsed into multiple entities. Whatever that source of love looks like, wherever it is found, it is one. One love. Universalism, they said, universalism equals all in. Salvation for all are good enough, worthy enough as they are to be invited into the kingdom of all life. When I heard the person say all in, I thought of the old Negro spiritual, which I love, which is called Plenty Good Room. Plenty good room, plenty good room. Plenty good room in my Father's kingdom. For those of you who love it this way, plenty good room, plenty good room, plenty good room in my mother's kingdom. Plenty good room, plenty good room. You just choose a seat and sit down. There's so much room. One love, all in. Is how this student summed up Unitarian Universalism, one love all in. And I thought, how lovely, how noble, how ideal, how beautiful. I was so drawn to that vision as a young person, and it draws me still so much. It's part of why I have given my life to this faith, because I believe in one love all in. And yet, after hearing that student, I realized I now know that in everyday life, in the nitty-gritty of ethics and meaning and relationship, we have to go further than shorthand. It's more than just one love all in. One love has to be love that is loving and respectful. That understands boundaries, that respects a no, that respects a sidelong glance that says, not now. One love has to be a love that is boundaried and respectful. All in has to be all that are willing to uphold and abide by the covenant of relationship that we share. Because in this non-creedal, non-dogmatic tradition, what we have is our history, our beliefs, which we are formulating and reformulating in light of one another's wisdom, as well as that wisdom from the past throughout our lifetime and our relationships, our history, our beliefs, and our relationships, all in. How we are with one another in community is of tremendous and central importance in this faith. What we believe and have inherited from our forebears in many ways only matters in how it shows up in our living. I remember hearing a rabbi talking about this whole spiritual but not religious phenomena, and he said, you know, when I think about it, it doesn't matter to me what kind of God you believe in. The question is, what kind of person does it make you? Friends, what matters to me is, what kind of person does Unitarian Universalism make you? One love, all in a covenant that is messy and beautiful and fabulous and maddening, in equal parts and on different days. In this microcosm, we get to test the metal of our idealistic visions. How are you doing at holding on to the inherent worth of the person spouting a diametrically opposed position from your own? How well are you honoring the space and words of those who tell you to stop? And how open are you to trying again after you've messed up? Sanctuary? Sanctuary. One love. All in. May it be so. Amen. There is indeed plenty good room. Plenty good room in the kingdom of life and love and justice. Plenty good room for you and for me and for us all. And in that kingdom, we will need to find ways to draw our boundaries clear, to invite one another into each other's lives in ways that are meaningful, to hold one another accountable to that ideal vision of love and life and peace for all. One love.